I do think, and that I believe very strongly, that you should go to a church where the pastor knows your name.
Yeah, that's a good rule of thumb.
Yeah, and that, that a person should be a part of a church where the pastor not only knows your name, but some things about you, mm-hmm. and would even have the capacity to know some things about
you.
Welcome to Reformed Podmatics, a weekly podcast hosted by Pastor Mark Van Dyke and Pastor Zach Dewey of Almond Valley Christian Reformed Church in Ripon, California. In each episode, we strive to apply Reformed theology to life and ministry in the 21st century. Thanks for joining us for this week's conversation. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Reformed Podmatics. I'm Pastor Mark.
And I'm Pastor Zach.
And today we are going to be discussing what is the ideal size of a Christian church. But before we get into the topic today, maybe some housekeeping, some notes to bring to our listeners' attention is that Pastor Zach and his wife Bailey are very likely going to be having a little one joining their family in the next few weeks here. When is the due date, Zach?
Yeah, the due date is April 2nd, so right after Easter.
April 2. Easter is March 31. And so we're a little bit unsure of what the schedule for Reformed Podmatics is going to be looking like, because if Mr. Dewey arrives early, then obviously we won't be really doing podcasts for a little while, because Zach will be gone on paternity leave for a handful of weeks. And it's possible that we'll bring someone else in to fill Zach's proverbial chair, you might say, for some time. But it's also possible that we might just take a little bit of a break on the podcast. And so if you don't see us posting, then that is our excuse in the next several weeks. Maybe we would even be able to put something up on Facebook to make listeners aware of the reason for the radio silence. But that's likely going to be happening, and maybe sooner rather than later.
Yeah, we don't know. We're living in that limbo stage right now.
That would be a good thing, I'm sure, for Bailey at this point to meet their little boy. And
yes,
those last few weeks of pregnancy are always difficult.
We are ready. We're at 37 weeks and counting now, and so any time now would be great. We keep saying, we keep telling him, come on out anytime. We are ready, especially Bailey. She's ready to be done with pregnancy and to have the rewards of it all. And so, yeah, it's an exciting time, but this is kind of an insight also into this podcast. Some people maybe expect that we record these weeks ahead of time and then release them on a schedule. Nope, it's far less planned out than that.
They come hot off the press.
Usually we put them together within hours of recording, and we post them either that day or the next day. And so, yeah, we don't plan these out too far in advance, which if we did, maybe then we could have had some in our back pocket ready for the weeks that I'd be missing. But I think that that's kind of a genuinely fun thing about this podcast, is that it's so fresh. And so as soon as we record, we put it up, and it's fun to hear people's thoughts as we're still kind of thinking about the things we just talked about. But as Mark said, we're going to be talking about this issue of the ideal church size. Just the other night, I was talking with a friend of mine named Steve, and he asked me a question, kind of point blank. I'm not exactly sure. I can't remember the context of the conversation, but he asked, what is the ideal church size? And he said, and try to give like a biblical answer. And it kind of stumped me. I had to step back and really think about it. And I told him, Steve, I think you just came up with the next episode topic. So here we are talking about this question of the ideal church size, because I think I could give a short answer, which I will save for the end. But I think also there's just so much that goes into the ideal church size.
It's kind of like saying the ideal family size.
Yeah, there's really, I can't really say anything hard and fast. That's maybe a little spoiler.
Yeah.
But I think we can kind of draw some principles about and look at pros and cons, and then kind of move from there. But also there are biblical passages that come to mind as we think about the size of God's people. And so we'll do our best to kind of give a broad overview and to be as balanced as possible as we work our way through this. But yeah, we live in a time where churches today are, many churches are getting smaller and smaller. But at the same time, some churches are getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah,
it would seem, at least to me, just kind of as I observe what's going on in the American church world, that mega churches are getting bigger and bigger, not so much because of purely evangelistic reasons, that they're making new converts, so to speak, although that is happening. And I don't want to not say that or not mm-hmm. recognize that. But I think a lot of what's happening is that as churches do get smaller and smaller, and things get more difficult at small churches to continue on, and there isn't the same kind of programming that people have for the past couple of generations come to expect, say ministries for kids or family friendly ministries or the ability to just do fun, exciting things. I think what this has created is sort of a mass movement towards mega churches. And so smaller churches have a harder time staying viable, staying alive, keeping their doors open. And bigger churches find it a little bit easier and easier to grow, to sort of take people. It's kind of like a consumeristic situation, a market situation, where you have mom and pop grocery stores 30 or 40 years ago that have kind of just had to fold because you have Costco's and Walmart's and
Amazon.
And Amazon, yeah, just kind of taking over. And in some ways, that same kind of data set applies to the American church. And so it might be helpful to start, as we even get into this, of kind of defining our terms that we want to use and what sizes of church constitute these different terms. So when we think of small churches or medium churches, large churches, mega churches, when we use that kind of terminology, what are the numbers we're going to be looking at, Mark? This was actually a hard thing to decide.
So the numbers, so I found an article on, I think it's worshipleader.com or something along those lines.
Yeah, where, that's right. Worshipleader.com.
And
we could post the link in the show notes as well.
It was an interesting article that looked at how many of each size churches there are in America. So the median is a very low number. One stat that I saw said the average American church sees about 65 in attendance on a Sunday.
Wow.
So there are something like close to 200,000 small churches in the United States. I think it was 177,000. And so that would be a church 0 to 99 people, less than 100 people who are members or regularly attending on a Sunday would be considered a small church. That's probably not that controversial of an opinion. I mean, that would be considered a small church. I pastored a church that was right about 100 members in Washington State, and it definitely felt like a small church because 100, 115 members would end up being about 80 to 90 on a Sunday. We had really good attendance from almost all the members, and yet it still felt like a smaller gathering of people. And so that had the small church feel to it.
Was that the smallest church you've ever been a part of?
A member of? Yes, I believe so. Yeah. Well, so the church that I grew up in, that was five families at first, and it grew and grew and grew to about probably 250, 300 members by the time I left for high school. So that was a church plant that was tiny. We were the only kids at first. And then it just, the town that I grew up in, Naperville, was just exploding in growth in the 90s. And so a lot of, like what you mentioned, a lot of people, we weren't pulling people from other churches, but so many people were moving into Naperville that they needed a church to go to. And we were a solid, decent church. And so they picked Christ Community, which is now called Plainfield CRC. But
So that's the small church.
Yeah.
0 to 99, we're saying.
Yeah.
And this is based off this article, which again, we'll post in the show notes for people to see. I was trying to come up with my own categories, and I was struggling to think about what would constitute a small church versus a medium church. But I thought this article was pretty good. I think it maps onto my own experience and my own sort of observations about churches. So this article suggests that a church from 100 to 499, so up to 500, is a medium small church. And of course, there's going to be lots of variation. If you're pushing 480, 490, that's going to feel kind of bigger than a church that's 110.
Yeah, there's a pretty big.
So that's a pretty big jump, really, in terms of the feel of a church. But I think that that's fair to say. And this is where some of the churches in our area, CRCs and others, kind of fall into, I think, this category. It's not uncommon in Ripon for many of our churches to have, you know, 200 to 300 people. Mm-hmm. So we kind of fall right in the sweet spot of what is called here the medium small category. And then it goes from 500 to basically 1,000 for the medium category, which I would say is medium large.
Yeah, that's on the larger side.
You're pushing large when you get well past, I don't know, 600, 700. That seems like a pretty large church to me. I should say I've spent my entire life at churches that hover around the 250 mark, give or take. And it really depends on the year, because some of those churches have experienced some growth or some decrease in attendance.
One really interesting stat is the largest category by membership is medium small. Yeah, so although there are a lot more small churches, there are a lot more people in medium small churches on a Sunday morning. So that's about 25 million people on a Sunday are in a medium to small size church. So that again, that's the 100 members to, or sorry, 100 attendees to 500 or so. That's 35% of churches by the calculations of worshipleader.com.
Wow.
So that rings true to me, probably, that although most churches are small, there are probably the most people who are in a church. I would say that's maybe even narrowing that window down, probably between 100 and 300 members.
Yeah, I would think that's about right.
And so that's very much the experience of our classes now, is that there are quite a number of very small churches, but then in terms of the population of the classes in terms of membership, it would be mostly in the medium small size churches. So less than 500 members, but
I was looking at the yearbook that was just put out, I think, for this year, looking at last year's numbers, I believe it is. And so our classes has 35 churches, if I counted correctly.
Wow, that's a lot. I think we're the biggest classes.
We very well may be.
Yep, in that
regard. And of those 35, I counted 23 that were 80 or smaller. And I counted 12 of those 80 that were 50 or smaller.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Of 35, there's 12 churches that are under 50. Some of them, the smallest is 15 on average attendance. Which I believe is one of the Korean churches in our classes that meets in the Bay Area. But yeah, that just goes to show how in our classes, there are some big churches that push over 500. There are a few that are sort of in that medium small range, like our church, which is around, I don't know, 200 or so on a Sunday. It would be normal, maybe a little bit above, a little bit below, depending on the
day. It's hard to tell because of live stream. And so do you count live streamer people as attenders? That's, to me, one of our biggest questions, even in reporting to the denomination, how big our church is. Because
that's a good point.
We'll have, this past Sunday, I think, was 175 or so people in person.
Yeah.
And then I want to say we had like 80 live streamers. And so, you know, like, I don't know how that counts, although I did just get a text from someone. Yeah, so-and-so that we're praying for, she watches our service every week. I've never met this person.
Yeah.
And that actually happens a lot.
It's hard to know with a live stream because many of them, from what I hear, are pretty faithful members of our church. Maybe they're on vacation, so they would be here otherwise. And then some of them are almost exclusively live streamers and don't have much of a personal connection. Maybe they know one or two people in our church or families in our church, which is how they know of our church.
Or they used to come to our church.
That could be it. Or during COVID, some people have sort of switched over to live stream and have not made their way back for whichever reason.
Or they moved.
Or they moved.
So they still watch our service. Like that, there was one family that moved to an area with no Christian Reformed churches.
Yeah.
And they were really struggling to find a church. So they would watch our live stream until they found one.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe for a couple of months before they transition. And so it's hard to count. It's hard to quantify.
Yeah. Which is probably good for us in terms of ego and so forth, right? That just knowing that this ministry is happening, we're offering it up to the Lord as a sacrifice to Him, whether it's for 25 people at a very sparsely attended evening service, which is kind of the low mark probably for our evening service, or if it's Easter Sunday and everybody's together and we can actually see everyone. You know, we walk by faith and not by sight, even in our worship, I think, a lot of times. And so it's good that we don't always see the fruit of everything that we're striving towards.
Yeah. So back to the categories, just to kind of finish that off in case people are still wondering. It says, and I think this is fairly accurate, a 1,000 to 2,000 people church is a large church. And then 2,000 and above is a mega church. It does also give a 10,000 and above measurement, which is a super mega church, which really would include mostly mega churches that are multi-site, and each of their sites has many, many members or attenders. Actually, I think that this whole categorization is based off of attenders, not of membership.
Yeah.
And so it's Sunday attendance.
It says there are 50 of those churches in America. So this is as of last
super megas.
Super megas. So of those 50 churches, it's only 0.01% of all churches are that large in America. But there's 700,000 worshipers in those 50 churches, which is pretty amazing.
And a sizable portion of the entire Christian population.
Yeah. The influence of those 50 churches is very extreme. And so in the mega church, so this is 2,000 to 10,000, there are just over 1,000 churches that are of that size. And really in the Christian Reformed Church, I don't believe there are any that I know of that have that many people there on a Sunday. I believe
over 2,000.
The largest is All Nations Church, I think, in Glendale, which is a Korean church, has about 1,400 to 1,500, I think, on a Sunday morning, is the last time I noticed that in the yearbook. And so the Christian Reformed Church definitely skews mid to small size churches. And so we'll get into some of the reasons why we think that that is generally a good thing. But then we could also recognize that there are some positives to being a larger church. There are some positives to being a very small church. And so, there's no biblical prescription to this. Actually, in the Acts of Synod 1939, I was reading that there was an overture to Synod that no Christian Reformed church should get above, I believe it was 200 members. It should split when it got
that
big.
That's fascinating.
Because of our polity and because of our theology of the work of a pastor, really requiring that work could only feasibly be done among a flock of about 200 or less.
Yeah.
So that overture was not accepted, basically on the grounds that it's a complicated matter that...
It's kind of arbitrary where we draw that line.
Right. So even Synod 1939 recognized that there's going to be different situations that would call for permitting Christian Reformed churches to be larger than that. I think that was the number, about 200. But maybe bringing that a little bit closer to home, I was just leading our new members class where we have four guys who are going to be professing their faith in our church sometime soon. And so I always give the history of our church, Almond Valley. And usually people assume in a town like Ripon, well, it must have been because of a church split that Almond Valley started. You know, some people started to get upset with each other. And so there needed to be a third Christian Reformed church in this town of Ripon, which at the time only would have had probably 2,000 or 3,000 people, I would guess, maybe, if that even, because it's about 15,000 now. But I always tell the story, Emmanuel CRC, which is 5 blocks away from where we're sitting right now, was getting very large. And there were a lot of young families that were saying, let's just go start a new church. There's not enough room, physically, not enough room in this church for us. And so where many other denominational streams would say, let's build a giant church sanctuary and get as big as we could possibly be, that's never really been in the overall DNA of the Christian Reformed Church. Yeah. They'll just say, let's start Third CRC, and then the next one we'll start will be called Bethel, and then Trinity, and then Grace, and that, like, and then that's why in Linden you have six Christian Reformed churches instead of one giant one. And
that to me sounds like gracious separation right there.
Yeah, that's what it is. And with the blessing of the local church council, and probably even with a lot of financial support from the local church council.
When I was first looking to move to Ripon, I looked up our church on Apple Maps on my MacBook, and other Christian Reformed churches popped up. Mm-hmm. I saw the RCA church and the Dutch, or the URC. So there was five Dutch Reformed churches that popped up. There may have even been six, because I think it showed a church that was long defunct, but it was still popping up on the map. It was an Orthodox Christian Reformed Church, which was kind of I've looked up the history of that. There was kind of like a group that left the CRC, I forget when, 70s or 80s. Somebody will have to correct me. They left for a short amount of time, and then they, I think, eventually disbanded and joined other denominations. But there may have been one in Ripon, I guess. And so I was just kind of confused. It looked like, oh man, there must be a lot of division in Ripon.
Yeah.
Especially amongst these CRCs. That was exactly my thought. And then I come to find out that no, it was very amicable and it was very intentional. And I think that that's a beautiful thing. Even how the three CRCs, the original CRC buildings, are all still very close.
Yeah.
Now, First Church, which is no longer in the CRC, has moved across town, but they're
still only
their building,
2 miles away.
Their building, it's still very close. It's a small town, but their building is now the Coptic Church down the street, and then there's the Emmanuel a few blocks away from there, and we're a few blocks here, so we're all very close geographically, which I think is kind of a beautiful thing, that there was such a love and a collegiality for one another. But maybe we could get into a little bit now, thinking about pros and cons of these different church sizes. I think I should say up front, before I get into all of this, that I will have my biases, because I've always been a member of a small, medium sort of church between, 200 and 300 people. That's kind of been my entire life. And so I do see a lot of the benefits of that, and I see a lot of the negatives of other sizes of church. But I think we should be able to say good things about both big churches and really big churches, and even small and very small churches. Yep. I think we can give pros and cons of both of these. So let's start with big and mega churches.
Yeah,
maybe at various points we'll need to make differentiations between the large category of 1,000 to 2,000 versus the mega church category. But what are your thoughts, Mark, on the pros of these big and large mega churches?
Well, on the day of Pentecost, the church went in one day from a small church, small medium, I guess, 120 believers there in the worship center there in Jerusalem, and to a mega church. So 3,000 in one day were added to their number. So I know that those who are a big fan of the mega church movement in America, they like that sort of Pentecostal example of being a large, massive gathering of people where
an explosion, evangelism explosion.
Right. The word of God was preached and people responded. The Spirit moved in power among people who needed salvation through Christ, and that happened. And so people like to look at something like that and say, well, it happened at Pentecost, and here we are today with our, say, 2,000, 3,000 member church.
Yeah.
And we have that energy and that word of God that people are responding to, and their baptisms on Easter and so forth every year, that, 75, 80 people being baptized. And that's an exciting thing to be a part of. And I would never deny that would be an exciting thing to be a part of. And there's biblical precedent to God saving a large number of people in one place and uniting them
through the ministry of a very small amount of people. So this was just the apostles.
Yeah.
And it was, just through preaching that so many of them came to faith.
Another example would be Spurgeon's church. And so the very Pentecostal not in the theological sense, but
lowercase
in the
P maybe.
Yeah, in the biblical sense, where before microphones were even invented, he was preaching to thousands of people on a Sunday.
Yep.
And certainly we could celebrate that the Lord was bringing revival to Southeast London through through Spurgeon's ministry. So I think at its best, you could say that there are that the Spirit in those places is gathering a huge group of people and showing his power through the preached word and through times of worship. Mm-hmm. I would say at its best, that's what can be visibly seen at a large church.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the merits of large churches are, I think, easy for us to see.
Mm.
They're approachable. They make sense to the average unchurched or dechurched person who drives by and sees there. Often it's a big sign. I can think of churches in Modesto that I drive by from time
Manteca
to time.
Has a big sign there.
Big signs on the freeway. And so you can see what's going on at their church, their service times. It's quite simple. They'll often have something about their kids' ministry, very, very visible. So you know when you come with your family where your kids need to go. And it's just kind of easy and approachable. And it's an easy on-ramp to the Christian faith for someone who is curious about Christianity or is maybe sensing that I need to go to church, but I don't really know anyone. It will feel almost, for some people, really intense to go to a small church because you're going to stick out like a sore thumb. So with a larger church, there's a bit more anonymity. And so that can make it just an easier thing to do.
Yeah.
I also think of the mega churches, and if we can call them that, I think they would qualify as mega churches in Modesto that do huge like philanthropic campaigns, sort of community services where they're taking care of cleaning up the trash in downtown Modesto, and they have canned food drives where they definitely provide far more canned food than I think our church does when we do a canned food drive and people drop off cans of food when they come to church on Sundays. These churches, because of their power and their size, they can really get a lot done in a way that a smaller or even a medium small church can't do on its own. And so, those are some major benefits that I see that these churches have.
And it's good to do things excellently.
Yeah,
and exactly. So at a lot of these churches, the sound is great. The building is clean. The landscaping looks great. There's attention paid to that, and we don't want to be so high in our spiritual ivory tower that we're those things don't matter. No, actually, it is good to have a beautiful building that is welcoming to people. And my brother goes to a church that's growing really rapidly, and it was planted maybe 7-8 years ago. It's probably about 800 members now. Wow. And their building is a beautiful building. There's a huge kids play area with a giant glass wall that you could see right into, so it's just looks very safe for parents could watch their kids from the foyer, and yet all the noise from all that doesn't reach all the people drinking their coffee. So there's just a lot of wisdom that goes into a lot of these ministries, practical wisdom lot of times. Yeah. So that I would say is another positive. But as I think about the negatives of the mega church, I do think they probably outweigh the positives in terms of if somebody's listening to this podcast wondering, should I just go to the mega church down the street? I would say first look for a good smaller church than the big one that everyone is choosing to go to. And there's a lot of I would say more spiritual reasons than just practical reasons, but some that come to mind pretty quickly are from a pastoral perspective. You will not know the pastor ever of that church.
I have something to say to that point. There's a mega church that I know of in Orlando. Now everybody's going to be keyboard warrioring and going and trying to find it.
Yeah.
But on their church's webpage, there's a section about the pastor, and it specifically says our pastor is not available for visits or meetings with anyone who may want to reach him. We have a whole other sort of pastoral staff who will meet with you, but our lead pastor, because of his commitments to his family, his commitments to preaching, is only going to be doing those things. And so he kind of takes on this sort of celebrity sort of status. He's almost untouchable, unreachable. He's the holy man. And I think that that is a really unhealthy situation.
That's not a pastor, actually. That's,
yeah, I would agree
with
you.
The word pastor means shepherd.
Yeah.
The word pastor does not mean preacher.
It doesn't mean you just shepherd from the stage. They would call it a stage.
Yeah, yeah.
You shepherd people by being in their lives, by smelling like your sheep a little bit, by being in the same, being with them, caring for them, holding them.
Yeah, and knowing them. Like I've once heard somebody say that the shepherd should smell like the sheep.
Yeah.
And by that, you just living your life with people. I have room for improvement in that. I'm sure every pastor could probably, it can be easy for us as pastors to just sit in the study and work on the sermon, because that is an important part of our job. The main part even is to minister the word. However, getting out into the hospital, into the retirement community, just being with people is always nourishing to me. And I know that it's so encouraging to somebody to get a pastoral visit when they're in the hospital, or when they just had a baby or something like that, that you would really feel like you're a part of a community, a family, instead of just a consumer of a spiritual product on Sunday from this holy man, or the guru almost is the approach. So could there be examples where somebody who goes to a mega church has a good friendship with the pastor? Yes, that could be happening, but it would be impossible for it to have a real relationship with the pastor for everyone in the church in a church that big.
Yeah. I definitely think that's one of the major, like the top three reasons of concern that I have for mega churches in particular, but still also for large or even that medium category of 500 to 1,000. That begins to be a real serious difficulty at that range. I think another reason I struggle with mega churches is for one of the reasons I mentioned as a pro. In some ways, it's a very strong negative, and that's the anonymity. It's the anonymity is partly what makes it easy for newcomers to come and to kind of be a spectator almost, to kind of get a feel for it. But that also becomes one of the greatest downsides of it, is that church is supposed to be a very, personal thing. Your Christian life is personal, but it's never private. We do this with the family of God, and so we need to know and be known, and that's a scary thing. That's a hard thing. That puts ourselves in a vulnerable position, but part of how we grow in our lives as Christ followers is by doing that in community. And so if it's a mega church, it's easy to kind of get lost in the mix. The lights are often down low, even it's dark, and
that's intentional.
It's very intentional. And so one of the great things about a small, or even a medium small church is that people do know each other. There's a strong sense of community. There's a strong sense of being involved in one another's daily lives. If someone's hurting, we can all hurt with them. We're weeping with those who weep and rejoicing with those who rejoice. Our each other's burdens and celebrations are something we all share together. And that sort of community capital is built up a lot more in a smaller church, where people can know each other and where the pastor can know everyone.
Yeah. Two quick points on that. One of the marks of the true church, according to the Belgic Confession, is church discipline. And so when a church is basically full of anonymous people, there can be really no practical discipline happening. And even from a pastoral perspective, I don't know everything about what's going on in everyone's lives, and neither really should I be. I couldn't handle the weight of that. However, I do know generally what when I serve communion and I see so-and-so taking the sacrament, and I know generally what's happening in their life, if they're recovering from back surgery, and this is just such a blessing to them to receive from Christ, spiritual blessing that will give them a physical reminder of how God is with them. And all the other physical signs in our life are pain, but this is a physical reminder of the sacrament of God's presence in your life. And so, like, just knowing that and seeing that, for that's just one example that comes to mind as a pastor, you know, that's real Christian ministry.
Yeah.
On the other side of that, on maybe the more negative side, we are aware as elders of folks who we need to talk with about participating in the sacrament. And so that's a sad reality of the Christian life, where people are really erring and running away from the Lord. It's our responsibility, according to the book of Hebrews, to give an account someday for those in our care.
Yep.
So we have to do that. And you just wouldn't be able to do that practically at a large church. And so that's one of the first things that comes to mind. But on the other side of that, too, is it might sound good to be anonymous now, but do you want to be anonymous when you die?
Yeah.
No, that's like a terrible fear that a lot of people would have. And so don't live valuing anonymity for your whole life.
Yeah, because anonymity also means loneliness.
Yeah. And so at our smaller to mid-sized church, when somebody dies, we pray about it on Sunday as a church, and we pray for their family. And we prayed just recently for Irene Bishop, who lost her husband, and the whole church is visiting with her. And the I think the service for Al was probably about 200 people or so came to the service. And that's because there's community connections that have been created, not just with people in the church, but through Ripon Christian School, where he was a teacher. And there's this beautiful cohesiveness to community that is just not there. And I don't think I've seen it. And I have family members who have attend mega churches, and in one case had a very serious health issue requiring the hospitalization of a child for more than a year, and the pastor was never there.
Yeah.
And so that's just, it looks great and the lights are impressive and the music is great, but when you're really going through something, you need the pastor, you need the elders to be aware of that and to pray about it with you in person and during worship, I would say, too.
Yeah, there's a lot to say on this point, especially for people who are introverted versus extroverted. Introverts tend to like these mega churches in some ways, but in other ways, they tend to not like them. And the ways that they tend to like them is that they can sort of float through without being known very much and having to deal with too many people. You can kind of come into the service, do your thing, and head out without people really noticing.
Yeah.
In another sense, these churches seem to be more exuberant and boisterous and expressive, and so that can be harder for an introverted person. But yeah, sometimes people don't want the invasion of a pastor in their life or of a community that knows things about them. That's one of the maybe the downsides of a smaller and mid-sized church, is that everybody knows everybody's business.
Yep.
And so
for better or for worse,
and that can create, you know, sort of a gossipy culture.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure. Almost like a voyeuristic. People love to watch each other's lives, and they know what's going on in each other's lives, and that's not always the best for us.
I think that's always the assumption of every small church, but I think honestly at our church, people really love each other.
Yeah, people do care, and I think over the course of time, now that we're a church in our 46th year, now I think we have that sort of community bond that has been established. But what were you going to say?
Oh, well, we could do a whole episode on pros and cons of mega churches. And so maybe we don't want
to
go.
There's a lot more we have to say.
Yeah. Maybe the last one that I would give is, when a mega church falls apart, it is a catastrophe.
Yeah.
Whereas when something goes down with a pastor in a smaller church, just the spiritual impact of that is less.
Because, and the community impact.
Yeah, less people are involved. And that's kind of a pessimistic way of looking at church, is like, let's go to a small church because if it falls apart, it won't be as bad. But sadly, we can think of those examples, Mars Hill probably coming to the forefront of our minds as it got so big and it was under this figurehead, which is really more the problem than the church size itself, is the culture of the church being a dependent celebrity church. It's dependent on the celebrity, Mark Driscoll.
Yeah.
And so when Driscoll fails, you know, everyone is just like left out in the
wind.
And
the spiritual church impact in Seattle is still felt to this day, 10 years later.
It's really sad. And so, whereas there are churches that are maybe not doing so well that are small churches in Seattle, but you wouldn't even know it, even if that church is a block away from your house. So, the devil loves to attack those influential people and influential churches. When it goes badly, it goes really badly, I guess, you think of Jimmy Swaggart and these people with all these big ministries where the name of Christ was sullied. That doesn't mean don't strive towards excellence and don't strive towards even a big ministry.
Yeah.
But that is a danger.
These kinds of churches tend to be kind of top heavy in the sense that they all depend on one tiny little fulcrum at the bottom.
Yeah.
And the whole ministry, the whole church is supported by that tiny little thing. It's almost it's almost like trying to stand on one foot. If you're a huge person, they're going to be able to be toppled over pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have a smaller base and you have, I think, elders and the council, it's not just the pastor, the celebrity pastor, the guru, things will be a lot more consistent over the course of time. You're setting yourself up for a trajectory of healthiness, I think.
Yeah. And that gets to my last point on the large church is I don't believe, and this is more of a philosophical, theological matter, I don't believe one man can handle that pressure of preaching, because or can handle that pressure of shepherding that group of people, that large of a group of people. I once saw Matt Chandler ask that question by Kevin DeYoung on stage. Huh. And so Kevin DeYoung comes from a Continental Reform perspective.
Yeah.
And he was just like, how do you have 3,000, 5,000, however many it was, souls that you are called to care for? And I appreciate that Matt Chandler recognized the weight of that on him personally, but he kind of has to disassociate in a way from the weight of that in order to do the job.
I even do
to some extent, where I do have to recognize when I preach that there is, I'm setting a spiritual trajectory for a lot of people, even in our church, which is, again, about 175 in person and, say, 60 to 70 online. And that is a very weighty thing for me personally.
Yeah.
But just make it times 10. And then there are a lot of horror stories of pastors who just crumble under the weight, like to use your fulcrum analogy again. And it doesn't need to be that way. Because I've heard of pastors who have said, I have to hit a home run every week.
Yeah.
And if it's not a home run, people won't come to church. That could be in a small church or a big one, but it's going to be there a lot more in a big one. The apparatus itself is part of the problem in that, creating that pressure. And there are those stories of pastors who commit suicide, like a young man in Inland Hills in Southern California took his own life. Part of the reason that he said was, I just had to be a perfect pastor so that this church would survive and would grow. And I'm really sad that would happen and that a pastor would feel that kind of pressure.
Yeah, there was a similar story in Orlando while I was there that had just happened before I moved, but it sort of sent shockwaves throughout the whole community. People were obviously grieved by it, and there was a lot of sorrow. It was a fairly large church. From everything I could tell, it sounded like, as far as mega churches go, it was one of the better ones.
Yeah.
But there was a suicide, and I'm not sure the else of the whole story. It's been so long now, but yeah, pastors feel that pressure.
Yeah, we take it personally when I would like to say I don't, but when people leave our church, it's hard not to say, well, I obviously must have had something to do with that.
Yeah.
And so if a pastor comes in and the church was 5,000 and then it drops down to 4,500, there's that internal pressure, and there's probably going to be a lot of external pressure. You're not growing the church. You're not doing what we hired you to do.
Yeah.
I know it becomes very much about that, just hearing conversations from people who used to be a part of mega churches, that marketing consumeristic mentality mm-hmm. becomes almost what the church is about instead of
yeah.
what happens at our church council meetings. It's, hey, how's so-and-so doing?
Yeah.
Oh, we should check in with, you know, so-and-so. I heard she's having a hard time in grief now. Yeah. And like, that's what a church council meeting should sound more like.
Yeah.
Have we met the numbers? You know, yeah. have we gotten yeah. like almost like a business meeting?
The quotas.
The quotas. Board instead of the council, you know, and the stage.
And in those environments, pulpit. Like the thought, and rightly so, I guess, in some sense, is that momentum really matters. If you lose 500 yeah. people, even though your church is still very large,
yeah.
that's going to be a sign that for other people, you would think, oh, if people are leaving. Uh-oh.
Yep.
Maybe I should start leaving too. Maybe this is kind of falling apart.
Yeah, better cut bait out. Before. Yeah.
Yeah. And yep. so that can be a scary thing if your goal is to keep the numbers up and yeah. always on a steady incline. And so, yeah, that could become a pretty unhealthy and toxic environment
yeah.
for those in ministry.
Okay. So we should talk about small churches. And we began with the positive of the mega churches. Maybe we can start with the negative of the small churches and kind of bookend this with putting some positive spin towards the end of the podcast here. What would be some of the cons of a small church?
Yeah, so we've already mentioned that sort of idea of everybody being up in one another's business. Everything becomes well known. It's like a small town,
yeah,
but even smaller, and so everybody knows everything. I think another one, and this is something that churches our size tend to struggle with, is that because we're right around that 200 mark, we have a decent sized church. I don't think of us as being a very small church. Mm-hmm. So we're the kind of church that has sort of ambitions and expectations for what a sort of yearly calendar looks like, what our ministries will look like, the different things that we do, different programs yeah. that we run throughout the
VBS,
year.
A big VBS, a big Christmas program. Yeah.
It
yeah.
can be really hard, though, because of our size, to find enough volunteers without burning people out over the course of time. Mm-hmm. And so this is something that I've sort of seen with the education committee. We're kind of in charge of helping all the different committee or all the different ministries in our church, from, you know, from nursery all the way on up through high school, even adult Sunday school, VBS, youth group ministries, yep. GEMS, cadets, all of these things that we kind of help find leaders for. So whenever one of these ministries needs to find leaders, they can report to us, and then we will join them in trying to find people to fill the roles. And yeah, with our size of church, I think that it's easy for people to spend a lot of time in a ministry that they've been asked and invited to join. And that can begin to be a difficult burden for them if they're left too long doing something because no one else has decided to sort of take the reins on it. And so we don't have huge numbers, and so there's not always a steady stream of those who can join in and take mm-hmm. leadership of these ministries. And so that's one of the common struggles, I think, of churches our size.
Yeah, particularly of a mid-sized church, the expectation of quality would be there,
yeah.
skewing towards a larger church, but then the mm-hmm. Access to, say, the volunteer force is
yeah.
is going to be difficult to meet that quality that a lot of people are looking for in some cases. So yep. That's a great example. I think very related to that one of the negatives that I put is that, especially in small churches, people will likely be called upon to do things outside of their area of particular yeah. giftedness.
Yeah.
And so if somebody really does struggle to teach Sunday school, mm-hmm. but they're the only person who has the time or willingness yeah. to do that, and then they end up doing that job for 10 or 15 years, mm-hmm. that becomes very wearying to a person. And maybe it's good for that person to yeah. teach the third grade Sunday school class when there's only two kids and
yeah.
You know, you're just the one who's going to tell them about the Lord every week. And it's not glorious at all. It can be discouraging when those two kids don't even show up and you worked hard on a lesson.
Yep.
That is very prevalent, I would say, in smaller churches where people are forced out of their area of giftedness.
Yeah.
I would say for a season, anyone should be willing to step up to do something in the church. Like if it means something is going to happen or not happen, mm-hmm. I think it's really important that every person in the church would say, well, I'm not very good at this, but I'll give it a shot for a year and we're just going to do it, you know, to get it done. However, if that becomes 10 years, 15 years of doing something that somebody really, it's more draining on them than life-giving. That is unfortunately the story for a lot of volunteers in smaller churches.
Yeah, I think the issue I'm kind of coming up with here as we talk about it is that because of our size, being a decent size, we do have many gifted people mm-hmm. who will come up with an idea or they'll take charge of a ministry and they are gifted for that ministry and they'll do it for 10, 15 years, maybe 5 years. And so then the church kind of comes to expect that ministry will continue on even after that person isn't able to do it. But because we don't have a massive pool of people,
there might be no one else who's going to pick it up.
But we expect it just to happen naturally because we've become used to it happening. And it's kind of like the toothpaste coming out of the tube again. When that person steps away, it can be difficult to kind of keep that momentum up. So that's an ever constant struggle, I think, for churches in our size category. Another one, kind of similar to the mega church one, is that we don't have as much manpower or resources to do those kinds of big community service projects. Mm-hmm. We can participate in other things that go on. Like here in Ripon, we do something called Love Ripon, which is a community service project day where the whole community, churches and unchurched non-Christian people, can come out and serve in different parts of our community by doing lots of beautification things. Mm-hmm. But some of it is helping out a senior citizen who needs some help in their backyard, or working on a school property, doing something on the school grounds. But we just don't have the kind of thing to do any, and we don't have the kind of resources to do a major campaign. We can do small things and contribute in ways that are really good. And collectively, we do this with a ministry here in town called Ripon Interfaith, which is with the other churches of our town to help get food to those in need and clothing to those in need. But that's not something we do exclusively ourselves. We do a ministry up to inner city Stockton, which is one of the cities near us where we go, and we do feed homeless people, and that's just our church. That's a couple of people every other Saturday. So we can do things like that, but it's not exactly the huge, big community project sort of things. And that's okay. I mean, as a church, our focus is not so much on community projects. Our focus needs to be on the proclaiming of the gospel.
Yeah.
But if I'm thinking of small or cons of small churches, that would be one of them. Another one kind of related is a tighter budget, mm-hmm. which often means in lots of, especially churches under 100 or under 75 people.
And in California, where they're like cost of living could be high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bivocational pastors become more of a necessity. Often even pastors who don't get paid from their ministry, but have to work a full-time career outside of ministry. And what this means just naturally is that this pastor can't focus as much of their time and energy and effort on the ministry to the flock of their church. Mm. And so some would see this, I think many have tried to give this a positive spin in the past 10 or 15 years of bivocational pastors. It's kind of a blessing to have one foot out in the quote unquote real world and one foot in ministry. And I think that's a fair statement. That's a fair position, but I think we shouldn't sugarcoat it. That it definitely means some disadvantages too, not being able to have pastors that are committed and focused solely and exclusively to their ministry.
Yeah, the Bible commands to pay the pastor.
Yeah,
and so Paul says, "I'm actually disobeying Christ by not receiving a salary from, I believe it's the Corinthian church at one point." And so bivocationalism might seem very practical, but it is the biblical instruction, even from Christ himself, the worker is worthy of his wages. And that doesn't mean it's wrong to have a bivocational pastor, but to me, it should always be hopefully on a trajectory towards hiring a pastor to preach the word, to visit the people, and so forth. One thing that might not come to mind for the negatives, and then we'll get into the positives of small churches as we start to wrap up, is that In a smaller church, everyone feels like they get a say in the decisions of the church. And this is just not there at a large church.
Oh, yeah. Like, at a large church, it's the few.
Oh, my goodness. Like, you just go to church. One. Yeah. And well, okay, what do they decide to do? Well, okay, yeah. That's just what they're going to do. Like, that's just how people at large churches think, which is shocking to a Christian Reformed person to think in that way about a church. Like, you mean I don't vote for the budget? You mean I don't get to pick the color of the new chairs? You mean I don't get a say in the renovation that's going to be happening over there? We need to put this to a congregational vote, you know?
Yeah.
For the smaller a church is, the more the individual people will have a sense of entitlement for being a part of the decision-making process. That could be a good thing sometimes.
Yeah, I think we could definitely see the positives to that. There's more buy-in in a sense.
So every member of a large church actually should have access to the church budget.
Yeah.
And that would be a good thing, although I'm sure it's not the case in many.
Probably fairly uncommon.
Yeah. And so that would be the negative side there. But the positive side of the larger church is people have an intrinsic trust of the leadership of the church. Whereas in smaller churches, it's more democratic, you might say. Well, we need to put this to a vote. Everything, you know, the question comes forward, are we going to get to vote on this? You know, sometimes you just need to trust the pastor and the elders, the leadership of the church, that every little area of minutia in decision-making does not need to be put to a vote. And going beyond that, you don't even really need that strong of an opinion about a lot of this stuff. Just trust us. And when a decision is made, let's just move forward with that.
Yeah.
And we don't have to hold on to that thing that happened 3 years ago that I disagreed with.
Let's not keep score.
There's just that scorekeeping in a larger church, from my experience, is just not there.
Yeah. Which is a benefit.
We didn't sing all of the exact songs we wanted to sing. And so, you know, that's okay. I guess we'll just, you know, get it next week. But let's move into the positives. I think the most positive thing about a small to mid-sized church is that in 1 Timothy 3, the Apostle Paul calls the church the household of God, which is in all of that chapter, Paul is using family language about the pastoral role, the leadership role in a church, and the connectivity of people with one another. He does the same thing in Titus. And so smaller churches do feel like families, a spiritual family where the person you pass the communion plate to with the bread and the wine or juice is somebody that you know, and you're serving one another. We know what's happening in each other's lives. In our very atomized, individualistic society that is countercultural, it is beautiful, and it's very, very biblical.
Yeah, I think that that's exactly right. There's that familiar face kind of a feel to it. It feels like a family. And I can attest to this, being in the churches I've lived in my whole life, it's very much a family. Even the church I grew up as a child going to with my family before I, in my later high school days, decided to switch churches, being independent, you know, as a 16-year-old. Just this morning, I had my seventh grade Bible study teacher reach out to me on Facebook and just tell me he's proud of me for who I am. He was my neighbor. He lived around the corner from me, and I grew up knowing him. His son was a year older than me, and there's still that sense of a community, that of a bond between him and I, even though I haven't really talked to this man in years and years. But we still see each other in our lives on Facebook, and we'll comment here and there on things, and there's that sort of feel that we have just because of how that bond that was created at a church of probably about 200, 250 people. That was back in the late 90s and 2000. So it's been 20 years since then. I think another one too, of this kind of goes back to 2 weeks ago, our episode on learning to love the CRC, where I mentioned that smaller churches and smaller, even smaller denominations have more of a unified vision, a coherent vision of what they are about. This is true of congregations as well. after a certain point, people have so many differing visions, and there's becomes kind of a different mentality, maybe different cliques within the church. But if a church is smaller, one of the things that it can be better at is having that unified vision of what their mission is in there, not only as a church to them, to their own members, but also to their community. And I think that can be a strong thing. This is why I think often church plants, if they have a very strong foundation and a strong unified vision, and they have good motivations and a good heart and their desires to please the Lord, sometimes you'll see church plants fizzle out, yes, but a lot of times you'll see church plants just thrive and grow because they have that solid foundation. If they have, they start out with 20 or 30 people who are rallied behind this coherent vision of what ministry for them as a church will look like and who they are and what they're going to be about, that smallness can be a blessing. It can be something that propels them into health. And so in the same way, churches that just tend to be around the 100, 200 size, one of their strengths can be that they're united, especially in their early stages.
Maybe final thoughts here. Just as a pastor, I do love being in a mid-sized to smaller church, because I'm forced out of just being a preacher, just being a guy who does one thing. Like these larger churches have their executive pastors and the preaching pastor and the discipleship pastor and so like when Zach goes on paternity leave, I get to do youth group, and so that's great for me.
Yeah.
And so when I was on sabbatical, Zach stepped into my role, and it's all hands on deck, and that's good for us in pulling us out of our little comfort zones of just doing the things that we want to do. Again, that's good for me personally to not just get too much into a niche. But lastly, I'll put my cards on the table, I guess, and we'll find out your opinion, Zach, too. I do think, and I believe very strongly that you should go to a church where the pastor knows your name.
Yeah, that's a good rule of thumb.
Yeah, that a person should be a part of a church where the pastor not only knows your name, but some things about you, and would even have the capacity to know some things about you.
Yeah, go to a church where the pastor, it's not weird for the pastor to talk to people.
Right.
I know of churches from close people in my life, where they'll talk about their pastor and the one time they talked to the pastor and how it was this interesting, quick conversation. It almost felt surreal talking to the pastor
like a celebrity.
In the elevator, or walking outside, and they see the pastor and they're walking by them and they say hi, and it was like, oh, I talked to Pastor so-and-so, that was my first time. If that's how it is, that's probably something to consider. What else were you gonna say about your thoughts on the ideal size?
Well, just from a pastoral perspective, I love knowing the people of our church and leading the new members class, and so I get to know people that way. But it sounds like kind of an arbitrary rule, but it's actually, to me, quite biblical. The last thing I'll say is that, yes, 3,000 were added to the number of the church at the day of Pentecost, but you do not get the sense that there was a group of 3,000 people meeting in Jerusalem from that
day on. There probably wasn't a building or a place big enough. Also, they were very persecuted, so they probably would have struggled to meet all at one place.
Yeah, just practically, it would have probably been almost like a parish system where, you're in this area of Jerusalem or Bethlehem or Caesarea, and so you're going to gather with the, say, 100 to 200 people nearest you.
Yeah,
and maybe there would be more in certain areas, but I like that more parish approach instead of the big central approach where the Apostle James comes and teaches everyone every Sunday. You don't really get the sense that was happening in Jerusalem, although it does say James was the leader of the church in Jerusalem, and so don't want to cast too many aspersions towards mega churches. But I do think the pressure to be big and to stay big is going to probably water down the theology. It's just what I've seen happening time and again in larger churches. There are exceptions to that, but they are few. Mm-hmm. So to call people into a church that's really a family and feels like a family and acts like a family when someone dies or when someone's in the hospital, that the church acts that way holistically instead of just a small group acts that way, or the visitation pastor you know, comes to see me. It's really a holistic thing to be a part of a church. And so that's why I would suggest somebody would be a part of a mid-sized congregation.
Yeah.
Or smaller is fine.
I do not disagree with you. I think I could say so many qualifications, though, that this would die the death of 1,000 qualifications. and my argument would not really be all that compelling. But I do, at the end of the day, feel the same. I think that a sweet spot for a church is probably the 100 to 300 mark. Of course, there's a lot of flexibility that needs to be given there. But I think if we think about what a church is and what a church is called to be by God, a church is a place where the means of grace can be practiced. And so that's the teaching of the apostles, so preaching, sacraments, fellowship, and prayer. If we think about the church as a family, the church as a household, these different images of a church, that kind of those, I think we can make inferences about the size of a church loosely on those statements, those images in scripture. If a church's mission is beginning to be bogged down, which I think it becomes really hard to do the mission of the church over a certain size, that sort of pushes in the direction of the size of the church. So as I hear you talk about Synod 1939, I had no idea about that, but I don't think that was a crazy thought. Mm. I don't necessarily agree that we should say after 200, a church must split apart and become two separate churches. But I think that there's a degree of wisdom to that idea. Mm-hmm. I would maybe just because it's my own experience and it's what I like, I would say maybe 300 is the point at which churches begin to seriously consider what that would look like. And this will mean things for churches that we have even in our own classes here. There are several churches well over that size. I don't think it's a hard and fast rule. There's lots of variables that go into play. Even 50 years ago, it would have been easier to buy property to split your church into two churches, whereas today it's going to be far more expensive, at least here in California.
Yeah, building two buildings.
So it makes more sense to expand a building and so on. But that's just one variable that comes to mind. But I think that to the extent that being the church and living on a mission as a church is bogged down or obstacles are created by your size, you ought to begin seriously considering whether you should downsize if you're too big. And so that's kind of where I lean. I think the sweet spot is anywhere from one all the way up to about 300. But again, that's just kind of my own opinion, really. Mm. I don't think that there is any biblical foundation for that. Although thinking about size in scripture, it often seems to be the case that God is more happy to winnow things down and to make the armies of Israel smaller at times. And it sort of moves against the idea of just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It kind of seems like God would like to cut things down to size a little bit. Even Jesus says difficult things that cause the crowds to walk away and to shake their heads. And so, I don't know. I think probably 100 to 300 seems like the ideal size, but that is very, very much up for debate.
Yeah. So let us know what maybe we've missed something that's a pro or a con for a larger or a smaller church. And hopefully we'll be back with you next Sunday, maybe next week. Maybe I shouldn't say hopefully, because we also hope the baby's born soon.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So we will join you whenever we do, I guess. We'll try to shoot for an episode next week. But until then, have a good one.
Yeah. Grace and peace, you guys.